And the thing that's really the worst for us is that we contract our entire body in an awkward position and sit there for a prolonged amount of time. When you're standing, you're much less likely to do that because at that point, you can actually get in closer. You can marry your hip with the side of that patient chair or that patient shoulder, and you can get in closer.
Welcome to the Phil Klein Dental Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about something we all use every single day, and that's a dental chair. Without the dental chair, the patient would be sitting on the floor while you do the work. And actually, that's the way it used to be prior to the 1700s. The patient would sit on the floor, and the patient's head would be braced between the knees of the operator. Just imagine that scene. Since that time, thank goodness, there have been many advancements in dental chairs, including a new chair by Dentalese that allows you to practice dentistry standing up. And there are some huge advantages to that, which we'll learn about. Today, we're going to be delving a little bit deeper into the dental chair. What makes it ergonomic? What are the things we should be looking for in a dental chair when we're in the process of purchasing one or maybe expanding our office and purchasing three more? These are things that are very important and relate directly to the longevity of your career. Our guest is Katrina Klein. She is a registered dental hygienist for 16 years, national speaker, author, competitive bodybuilder, which is very cool, and certified personal trainer. She's the founder of Ergo Fit Life, where ergonomics and fitness are a lifestyle to prevent, reduce, or eliminate pain. And all of us who have experienced pain in our neck, back, shoulder, hands, wrist, and you name it, totally understand how pain can be debilitating and make your day in the office quite miserable. And to help us avoid all those problems, I'm proud to introduce our guest, Katrina Klein. Katrina, thanks for joining our show.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We're really happy to have you on the show. And what you talk about and what you teach, and it's just so important in the longevity of a dental practitioner, whether it's a dentist, a hygienist, or even a staff member who's helping out in the operatory. There's so many variables involved with maintaining good ergonomic behavior. So on that note, how much of a role does the dental chair play in the realm of ergonomics for the dental team member?
It's huge. It's a major, major player when it comes to operating in an ergonomic fashion, because where that patient sits is the first problem that we run into, right? Because if we can't get to the oral cavity, how are we supposed to do our work? And so there are some major things that come into it, not just the features on the chair, where it's also where the patient chair is placed in the room, with respect to the access that you have to 12 o'clock, whether or not you can move it when there's a wheelchair patient in the room, for example, or you know, transferability, whether you can actually get to the midline because the chair is the size of a lazy boy or what have. There's a ton of different things that impact our ability to even gain access. And so that patient chair is a major factor. And it's one that I see a lot when I go and I do coaching with dentists or hygienists or assistants. They're leaning forward, they're hunching over, all these things. The loops help keep your body away from a certain part. But, you know, if the patient is so far away from you because the midline is, 25 inches away, you have to make up for that somehow. And it's either, you know, with indirect vision, moving the patient head, or moving your body. And what do we do the most of? We move our body. We contort ourselves to where that patient is at. So it is a major player. And it also happens to be probably the most expensive. The most expensive item is these chairs.
Yeah.
And so how we set ourselves up is huge. I know that we want to make the patient comfortable, but you know what makes the patient really comfortable? The ability of the operator to be efficient so they can get out of there.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's 100%. I mean, the patient wants their teeth taken care of and their gums very healthy when they go to the hygienist for their recare appointments, but they're ultimately looking to go into that dental office and get out as fast as possible.
Yes.
And also the mood of the operator is going to be a lot more elevated, happier, when they're comfortable. And on the flip side, if the operator is having pain and discomfort, the patient's surely going to pick that up. And that's not the kind of impression we want to send to our patients.
Yeah.
So for sure, the manufacturers of dental chairs are aware of the ergonomic issue. They've addressed these issues. They've made some changes. Tell us about some of the changes and tell us how it evolved. Like, where did we start and where are we now?
You know, we went from basically barbershop style chairs, and someone had this bright idea to put the patient into supine. And so what they were finding is they did two changes. One, they made the operator sit down and they put the patient into a supine, which essentially canceled the benefit of the supine out by making the operator sit. But what they found is the operator then had to hunch over quite a bit more because the chair was very deep. And so the very first ergonomic, and I say that with quotation fingers, is was to make the chair not so deep. So it was more shallow. So you could get your legs up and underneath that chair without having to be so far back. And then they started talking about, okay, well, let's change the narrowness. Let's make it so we can get in closer and make the armrests not hard plastic. You remember those old Pelton and Crane chairs, which, by the way, were wonderful chairs, except that the arms were wood and you couldn't move them. They were just there. And so the operator, again, they couldn't get in close. And so they went to the sling back arms. And so anything we could do to get the patient closer, or get the operator closer to the patient. And then the revolution of patient comfort became a thing. And we started widening the chair backs and putting massagers in the chair backs and making them extra cushiony, which reversed all of the
Yeah, and
benefits.
that was a marketing selling point for the office to kind of show the patient that, we're here to make you so comfortable, and this is an environment that's not stressful. It takes the subliminal stress out of the whole operatory when you're sitting in your living room chair with the pillow top softness and plushness of the chair or the seating area. But what was the result of
We lost because
that?
you don't have to provide them with a lazy boy in order to make the visit comfortable. I mean, if we're being completely honest here, what we're doing is still pretty barbaric, and you can't take the drill out of the operatory. I mean, actually, I know of a dentist who is, but but really, mostly, we're still doing what we're doing, and ultimately, our comfort and our ability to use our instruments correctly in the mouth is what gives them comfort. They just want to not be in pain in the procedure, and a massager on their back isn't going to make them more comfortable. It's gonna give them this something else to be distracted about, sure. But that's not going to get their mind off of their teeth being
Yeah,
drilled.
that's what I think. I think someone who's really fearful of the dentist is not going to walk into a dental operatory and see the quilted or this plush seating system that this chair has built into it and say, "Yeah, this is going to be great. I'm just going to relax and go into a zen-like mode here." It's not going to happen. But listening to music and headsets, those kinds of things do help. So, I think it's just, one manufacturer probably came out with the idea and the other ones had to do the same, because otherwise the sales rep selling the other brand would say, "Hey, to the doctor, for the same price, look at the comfort your patient's getting, and the patient appreciates this." But we're here more to talk about, the safety and longevity of the actual dentist and hygienist and assistant, because without a good chair, you're destined to have problems with your back and your shoulders and your wrist, and just keeping everything aligned, and you're going to end up seeing your chiropractor a lot more than you want to. So when we're talking about a modern dental chair, I know most chairs have similar features and they claim to have similar benefits, but is there any particular chair that has something that should be looked at or considered when a dentist is looking to purchase one or more chairs to the practice?
So certain ergonomic features that I would look for are chairs that A, have that narrow back, as well as the shallow depth. Those are big things, but also the ability to have a height that you can stand while practicing. Now, for me, I'm 5'1", so just about any chair I can stand for. But if I remember, you're pretty tall, so not every chair can do that. So I only know of really one chair that goes up to, I believe, 36 inches. And that's by Dentally's. That's their 6400. And it goes up to 35, 36 inches high. And so someone who is above, say, 5'9", 5'10", can practice standing in order to get a variation in posture. And so to me, that's huge because so much of our postural problem is a lack of variation. We need to be able to get into different positions, quickly change clock positions when we're in operation mode or actively doing something in the mouth. And then in operatories where you can't get to 12 o'clock quite so easily, be able to navigate into that space without having to put a whole dental operator stool in that space. So that's another kind of a big thing. So those three things to me are so huge. You know, having that narrow back, shallow depth, and then also the height. The only other big thing that I would say is the dual articulating headrest. We need to be able to move that headrest back. When I do assessments in dental offices and I work with dental teams, the first thing that I see in almost every chair, we've got that headrest tilted forward, which puts the chin on their chest, essentially. And then we're not just leaning forward, but we're craning our heads forward and doing some contortionist type thing while holding either a very sharp instrument or a drill handpiece in our hand. That doesn't make them any more comfortable. It makes us less comfortable, and the whole process is just not good. So dual articulating headrest, the ability to stand in a narrow back, and then last, I would say, is the shallow for when you are sitting, so that you can get underneath with your
Right. And
legs
I was going to
if you're
mention,
not.
yeah, the depth you're talking about is how thick the actual
Correct, the back.
the back, and
The back part.
that back needs to be as thin as possible so that your
Right.
knees, your legs when you're sitting down, and your from your knee to your hip, is that supposed to be parallel to the floor when you're sitting?
No,
Okay,
no.
what's
And
that position?
so that was the next thing I was going to say. If you are using a saddle stool properly, your knees are going to be significantly below your hips. And so, like a 135 degree angle if you were looking from the side. And so, if your knees are down that far, the thickness of the chair isn't really as important because you don't have to get so far. You don't have to get your knees directly underneath their back, touching their back. You can get all the way up close to a patient and have your knees on the ground, or feet flat on the floor, knees, where they're supposed to be, your body's where it's supposed to be, your back is in the right lumbar position, and you're right up next to there. If you're using a saddle stool and using it correctly, the height or the thickness isn't quite as important, but still important. Because
Right.
ultimately, some portion of your thigh is going to be underneath that patient back.
So I don't see dentists often using saddle stools. I see staff using it, but I don't see dentists. Is that am I missing something?
I think that the information has been out there for a long time, but what do they teach us in? When we're in school, we're sitting on that round flat saddle, or I mean that round flat seat pan, or the free one that you get when you buy a patient
Right.
chair, and they'll give you those free all day long. And so if you're a brand new dentist, or you're even buying someone's practice, you're in debt up to your eyeballs. And so buying a new operator stool when you've already been trained how to use a regular stool, whether it's best for you or not, is probably not high on your list. It should be, especially if you're experiencing back pain. But what do we think about when we have back pain? We think, oh man, my loops. Right? We don't think about the chair we're sitting on, even though we sit in our saddle stool or our operator chair for, potentially 8 hours a day.
So eventually they get that free stool and they realize this is not the best stool for me, and they end up putting it somewhere in the lab or wherever, just as a place to sit on in the break room or
Staff
something,
room,
staff
supply
room.
room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Well,
eventually
that's,
you
you know.
try it, but then there's also the thing is, okay, so I went and I bought this saddle stool, hopefully not the next day delivery one, because you want something that's going to fit your body. And then sometimes we get stools that don't fit us. And so if you're not getting a stool that fits you, and then you aren't taught how to adjust it to make it fit you or sit in it correctly, it's training, it's education, like
Right.
anything else. If I can come in and I can see that the headrest on these patient chairs, it's a dual articulating headrest, but nobody's ever taught the operator, the assistant, the hygienist, how to put the headrest back. Well, the tool was there the whole time. It's just nobody taught them how to
Yeah.
use it.
And that's not uncommon in dentistry. I mean, they install CBCT machines in dental offices and they don't really do much to train you on how to use it. And these are $80,000 machines. So it's,
Right.
yeah, there's a lot to learn about the equipment we're using in our dental practices. But, you know, many dentists are very focused on dentistry, the clinical part, and running the
Right.
business. And they look at a stool as something they sit in, and they don't particularly focus too much on the ergonomic ramifications of having a stool that may not be adequate. But let me ask you this, Katrina. What are some of the obvious red flags that dentists and dental team members should be aware of when they're self-evaluating? Hopefully, they are self-evaluating. This way, by knowing those red flags, they could correct them early on and hopefully change paths so that they're not heading down the pathway of injury and a shortened career.
Well, first of all, I highly recommend self-evaluation. So, what I recommend is getting someone in the office to take photos of you when you don't know that they're doing it, so that you can go back and look at it. Because most of us, if you look at a picture of yourself practicing, and you've got your head lunged forward and down, you've got your I call it a chicken wing, your elbow up in the air, you're leaning over to the side. All those things are huge red flags. If you've got the patient where your forearms are not parallel to the ground, that means the patient's too high or too low. And I've seen every variation in between. Those are your red flags. And a lot of the times, in dentistry, we're pretty intelligent folks. If you have someone take a picture and you don't know it, what that you're being taken of, you're being looked at, you can look at that picture later and go, oh. And if you can't figure out, what am I doing wrong here, then yeah, give me a call and I'll help you out. But, a lot of times we can just do a little bit of self-correction, like, oh man, I didn't realize I was leaning to the left, or I didn't realize my elbow was up in the air. I didn't realize. And so just having a little bit of self-awareness, or asking someone that you can trust in the office to take a photo of you practicing, and then also not posting it on
Yeah, right, of course. So
Instagram.
let me ask you this. What does standing up do for you? Now, I know this new chair, the Forest 6400 from Dentally's, allows you to go up, and I think it's 36 and a half inches as far as
Yes.
raising the entire seat base. What does that do for the operator? It's so important to look at a chair like that.
So the reason why standing dentistry originally didn't work is because the patient wasn't supine. Their oral cavity was faced forward. And so the only way to gain access was with indirect vision. So when we put that patient supine, you can actually stand, remain standing, and now you can do what we call micro shifting in ergonomics. You can move your body from one, the weight of your body from one foot to the other. You can easily get to a different clock position. That variation in posture gets you out of a static load position. And so, what we have a tendency to do, and the thing that's really the worst for us, is that we contract our entire body in an awkward position and sit there for a prolonged amount of time. When you're standing, you're much less likely to do that. Because at that point, you can actually get in closer. You can marry your hip with the side of that patient chair or that patient shoulder, and you can get in closer. And so, and you can get in close with a saddle. I'm not saying you can't do that, but having that variation in posture, and what I recommend is for hygienists to go every other patient, stand and then sit, stand and sit. And then for doctors, when you have a quick appointment, you have an anterior restoration to do, you have, extraction on the, anywhere bicuspid and forward. A lot of doctors prefer to do surgery that way. It gives your body an opportunity to recover.
And
The reason we end up,
yeah, no, that makes total sense. What are they standing on? Is there some sort of, let's say it's a tile floor in the operatory. Should there be some cushioned rubber mat?
ideally, but we move so much that most likely, if they're wearing cushiony enough shoes, I mean, just like a waiter or a waitress is going to be wearing cushiony shoes, right? We're not going to go in there with our ballet flats and try to navigate the whole day on your feet that way. I recommend compression socks, because the more you stand, the more you love to stand, because it feels good on your back. And that was the second thing I was going to say, is when you stand, you're in a normal neutral position. It's the way that your body was made. You have that natural lumbar curvature, and all of the discs and vertebrae stack up evenly in pressure all the way up. And so when we don't do this leaning thing, where we're leaning at the hips or leaning over at the shoulders and we're hunching over, that creates what we call bulging discs, because all the pressure goes on either the mesial or the distal end of those vertebrae, and it pushes that disc that's kind of spongy.
So that's interesting, Katrina, because all my life I've always thought that when you stand for prolonged periods of time, it compresses your disc in your lower back, your lumbar region, and that's bad. And then you should sit down and get some good lumbar support. But I assume I've been wrong about that.
You are, but I love that you bring that up. So it depends on the way that you're sitting. If you're doing what we call passive sitting, so you're in your lazy boy at home, you're not engaging your muscles, all those spinal erector muscles, all of the intervertebral muscle, the musculature that's going and wrapping itself to support the spinal cord isn't engaged when you're just sitting at home or you're at the kitchen table or whatever. When we are working and we're either leaning either straight up or forward, all of those muscles are engaged. So it's actually the opposite. When we are Leaning forward, those discs to push out even further when we're not in neutral. It's the way that we move our body out of neutral and that really makes a problem. Like if you're leaning for every 10 degrees that you lean forward, you're asking those muscles to engage even more, right? And so that load and that pressure on the disc to go one way or the other, depending on which part of the spine you're in, gets more and more. So if you were to lean completely forward, that's a lot of pressure on those discs, right? But then you come back up, and if you're standing completely neutral, there's zero pressure apart from just your normal body weight. You put 10 degrees forward and now there's pressure.
Right, but the
And
thing
so
is,
when you're
when you're standing though, you could just move your feet to, and then you're once again aligned. So
Yes.
you don't have that leverage problem, that being further
Right.
away from the center, from that
Yes.
center point. Yeah, no,
Yeah,
that
because
makes
you're
sense because
engaging
you're.
the left side or the right side. You can lean a little forward on the toes, a little back on the heels. You can move the feet in different directions so that you can kind of center that weight. All the things that we do when we micro shift, we're just shifting body weight,
Right.
but by shifting your body weight, you're engaging and activating different muscles and relaxing other muscles.
So is that why my hairstylist, which is really my barber, I just go to a Great Clips in Austin, whoever's there, I do have a favorite person, and they're on their feet all day. And as a one that practiced endodontics for 15 years in, a pretty active office, I sat in a chair. Obviously, I didn't treat people standing up, but I had back problems because I probably did everything wrong ergonomically. But she told me that she never has a back problem and she stands all day. And so the answer is because she's constantly compensating with her feet and keeping everything in alignment, where we can't do that when you're sitting. Or, I mean, you could roll the chair a little bit. That helps.
Right. Well, I will tell you this. I'll tell you a short story. I hurt my ankle a while back, and I went and I got some PRP injections done in it to repair it. And right after that injections, I had to spend a week only using my saddle stool. My body and my back included were more sore that week than any other time in my career because I had no variation in posture. I was just sitting. And so even though I was sitting correctly, I was sitting in my saddle stool, which is it's a tremendous tool. It keeps your hips neutral, it keeps the lumbar spine neutral. It's great for the back. But my body is so accustomed to having ideal circumstances of sitting, standing, sitting, standing that I was more fatigued. So it's amazing when you stand because you're not just standing, you're moving. That ability to compensate with micro shifting lends to so much. And so yeah, definitely standing during dentistry. Not full time. I don't think that's necessary. I think having the ability to sit is also essential as long as you're doing it in a saddle stool.
How does
Because
that affect forehand dentistry though, if a doctor decides to stand?
it can be problematic if you've got someone who is super, super tall and you've got an assistant who is really, really short, or vice versa. I've seen it both ways, and that can be problematic. That's where you end up with I've had one doctor I work with had these big aerobics stepping devices. They were like the little step things, and they're like 3 feet wide or whatever. And that's what his assistant used because they were wide enough and deep enough so that she could get around and be safe on there, but also be able to see. And then we've also had, I know that, for example, Crown Seating makes these extra tall cylinders for their assistant chairs. You can get taller assistant
Right,
chairs.
right.
That does make it hard though for them with being able to get out of that chair to go get something. So a lot of the times I recommend that assistants stand.
Yeah, and let me ask you about the programming. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about the technology of the chair. Tell us about chairs that have this ability to be programmed. A lot of them do. They're settings, presets. Tell us about that.
So auto programming is I think a very underutilized resource. We have to get the patient back no matter where they're at, no matter how tall they are, how big they are, how short they are, whatever. We have to get them into supine. And so if you have a button on there that's pre-programmed to the amount of supineness, that's not a word, but we're going to call it a word today, for how far back you need them, you can tell the patient, okay, I'm going to go ahead and lean you back now. The chair knows how far back you need to go, but don't worry, I can bring you up from there if you need it. So, and I always say, so that we can practice safely, so that I can do this procedure for you safely. And when you enter that word into the conversation, what do you mean safely? because my instruments were designed to be used in a specific way so that I can gain access to your mouth. If I can't see in there, it's a sharp instrument. So, like, you want it to be safe. I mean, and I, as a hygienist, I say, these things are pretty sharp. Ha ha ha. I'm laughing, they're laughing, but it's not, it's what it
That's a
is.
great approach. I think that's a great conversation because they're willing to deal with just about anything when you're telling them that, you have sharp instruments and the safest way to go is to be in this position. I assume in most cases when you present it that way, Katrina, they're not going to resist and they'll take the position you put them in.
If I say it's what's safe for me, I have back problems, blah blah blah, they care, but they don't really care. They just want to get their work done and get out,
Yeah.
So what's in it for them? You'll be more comfortable. You'll be more safe. You're going to get a better restoration. That's what's in it for them. It doesn't mean the rest isn't also true, but let's get them on board with what we know they are going to agree to. And so having that pre-programmable button is great for that because you get them at the bottom, you get them into completely supine. Don't worry though, I can get you back up because I'm your friend, right?
Right,
Like
right.
I'm the good guy. And you bring them up an inch from the bottom, and then is that okay? No, it's okay. I'll bring up a little bit more. And I can guarantee you that going from the top and doing an inch at a time versus the bottom and going back up from an inch at a time, you're always going to be in a better place.
Yeah,
They're always
so,
going to be much more further down.
and most of these chairs that are on the market today have these programmable
Yes, they
capabilities.
do.
Okay.
They do.
The
So
days
having
of,
that and using it.
and if there are different dentists using the same operatory, they can just have a number assigned to them, each of them. And also, they can have a sitting and standing positions as well, pre-programmed, I assume.
Yeah, they can push their number. And I usually will go in where there are multiple people using it, and I'll have one for sitting, one for standing. And then one for, the other alternate person. And then of course you have what I call the eject button. And this is, get out of here.
Right. It's
You're free.
time to leave, time to leave. So let's get back to the Forest 6400 by Dentalease. In addition to the advantage of being able to raise that chair 36 and a half inches, which allows pretty tall people to operate standing up, it also has something called CareGlide, which I think is very unique. And they have some really good videos on it. Tell us about CareGlide because it seems like an invaluable feature for special needs patients.
So the CareGlide in this particular chair, you push a button and it actually will glide the chair. It'll slide it over to the left, to the right, rear and forward, so that you can get a wheelchair patient in there, and there's room for it. So you can transfer that patient more easily, and or you can swivel the chair, move it out of the way, and practice with the patient in the chair, up close to your equipment, so that it's ergonomically beneficial for you. Also, as a left-handed clinician, this is a really good thing because most operatories are set up where the patient chair is initially put in the center of the room, but then because right-handed operators go in and push it over, there's almost no room on the left-hand side of the chair. So as a left-handed clinician, I can go in and just slide it over 5 or 6 inches and it's not a big deal. And I feel like it's just something that you can do to change your operatory in such a profound way. A lot of the times, these people that set up the rooms, they're not dental clinicians. They're not even sales reps. They just put the chair in the dead center of the room and leave no room for you at 12 o'clock. Plenty of room in the patient chair in the foot area, but nothing for you. And so you can use that chair glide to kind of move the patient around a little bit. Not the patient chair around a little bit so that you can navigate in your space. I mean, how wonderful is that?
I've seen some videos of it. It's pretty impressive. And I don't think any other chair has this.
I've not heard of another one, no.
Yeah. So it was
No,
very
it's a
interesting to,
nice feature.
yeah. And
Absolutely. I
it,
would take that over the massage thing.
yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And
Plus,
I
how
think,
many times do you get somebody in the room that is, I'm going to say, out of the ordinary proportion size where
right.
you need
A
to
large person, a
adjust?
very large
Yeah.
person. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even a very, very small person, that needs maybe another person in the room to hold them there, to kind of make sure they don't wiggle off the chair or whatever. If you need to move your room around without having to take three people to move this 300-pound patient chair, you don't have to. You have a push of a button.
So in the last part of this podcast, Katrina, I wanted to ask you for some recommendations that you can give to our audience, good tips and tricks for testing out a dental chair before you buy it, because you don't want to purchase a dental chair and then realize this is not working for you. What's the best way to do that? Obviously, you can't ask for a sample like you do in composites or glass ionomers or bonding agents, because those are consumable, tiny little objects that they send you in the mail. What's the best way to go forward?
Honestly, trade shows are a really great place to do that. You know, Chicago Midwinter, Yankee, you know, they're all over the place. The state association meetings, the bigger ones like, you know, CDA Presents and things like that. The vendors are all there. They're paying to be there so that you can try out their chairs.
What about visiting a showroom, for instance, a distributor showroom like Shine, Patterson, or Banco, et cetera, or even the manufacturer's showroom? I'm sure Dentalease has showrooms where you can really experience the dental chair.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually been to the Dentalease one, believe it or not. They have a couple of them throughout the company, but you could go to any of these chair manufacturers and they'll have mock operatories set up where you can actually go in there and sit down and feel it on your body, because not every body is the same. And so you need something that will adapt to you. You know, as a really tall clinician, you're going to need more ability to get that chair up, for example, than someone who's 5'1".
So as we close out this podcast, Katrina, and it's been excellent, tell us the best way to get a hold of you if we have a question, because I know you are very open to reaching out to our audience, which is great. You also have some great videos on ergonomics and everything else.
So all of the videos and things that I have are out on social media. Either it's everything is ErgoFitLife. It's ErgoFitLife. So ErgoFitLife, whether you're on Facebook, I've got a group that I post in almost daily with free tips and things on everything, posture and ergonomics and fitness and all the things. On Instagram, it's ErgoFitLife_Katrina. My email is always a great place to reach me, ErgoFitLife@gmail.com. If you look up ErgoFitLife, you'll find me.
All right, awesome. Well, listen, you know, we really appreciate it. And again, feel free to reach out to Katrina. She's got a wealth of information on ergonomics and she's a bodybuilder. What can I say? There's nobody else that's going to be able to answer your questions better than her. All right. You take care. Have a great evening. And thank you so much, Katrina.
Thank you.